Hi folks, it's your host Harmit, and you're listening to Tobin Talks.
So I'm mainly going to be asking questions about kind of the whole trip and everything, but I mainly wanted to know how you got interested in tax law to even begin.
Okay, yeah, sure, for sure. Is that the question?
Yes, sorry.
Okay, no, that's okay. It kind of all happened by accident. It sort of starts last year, where we got an email saying, do you want to sign up for a moot? You have to come and do like an audition, right? So I actually auditioned in front of David Ireland and, well, Justice Ireland now, but and also Professor McPherson, right? So I sort of did it in front of them. I ranked a couple of my moots, and then I just got chosen for the Bowman tax moot, which I didn't actually I kind of forgot all the names for the moots at that point. I was a bit like, and then when I got to school this year, I realized, well, I didn't realize, people told me that if you're in the Bowman tax moot, you actually have to take the tax course. And I was like, oh god damn it, this is horrible. So then after I enrolled in the course, it turns out that I had to rearrange my entire schedule because of the number of credits I was taking, and the moot is also for credit. So fun fact, I ended up taking human rights law, which really it was kind of crazy because I was like, well, this, both areas are just so vastly different, or so I thought, right? Just because a corporate, like when you're talking about tax law, right, your clients are typically people who have assets, you know, and money that need to be, like, tax planning is going to make like a pretty big impact on their taxes and the benefit that they get from the taxes, right? So when you look at that, it's kind of like tax law and being a tax lawyer primarily targets like wealthy clients, and like large businesses and organizations that, you know, have tons of funds, whereas human rights law, kind of opposite, right? So I was like, I'm not too sure how both of them relate. I don't know what this semester is going to look like. But as soon as I got to class, I was just taught, I did the Mishpatim program where I went to Israel as well, right? So I had some sort of like, because it's a paper topic, right? Like, it's a paper written, it's a course where I have to write a paper. So I was just talking to Dr. Draco, and I was just like, hey, so I'm not too sure what I'm going to do, but I think I can do something about Israel. I really don't know. I very, very, very honestly just explained to him that, bro, don't say that, but I just very honestly, I was like, you know, I'm only in this course because I have to be. I don't know how to write. I'm not a good writer. My background's in STEM. I just don't know, right? Like, I'm just really bad at this stuff. So he at the end of the day was like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, what are you interested in? And I said, I'm doing Bowman Tax and like the Bowman Tax Moot, which is in Toronto. And then I'm also taking the income tax course, right? And I was like, whoa, like this course is amazing because it's just so, anyway, that might be another question that you want to ask, but it's a really, really good course. And I genuinely enjoy it. And I didn't actually think I would enjoy it as much as I did, but it was amazing. So then I told him that, and then he was like, oh, you know, did you know, like, this is a really big, big topic coming up, you know, like in global affairs. And I was like, really? What? So then he sent me an email with like 30 links, right? Just hyperlinks. I swear that man loves hyperlinks. So yeah, he sent me an email with like so many hyperlinks just on taxation and human rights. So I did a crap ton of reading, and I was just like, oh wow, this is amazing. Turns out the committee meeting was also happening. So my interest was very like organic, I would say, It wasn't planned. Didn't even know about the area. Didn't know it existed. But Dr. Draco gave me some books, hyperlinks. So it all worked out, and that's how my interest began.
So kind of, I guess, like on like the logistical side and everything, how were you able to travel to the UN with all this like tax stuff? How did that part kind of come to be?
Right. So, okay. It's a bit, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm trying to keep my answers short, but it's
No.
just such, it's such a convoluted sort of thing, right? Because I didn't know I was going to do this, and there's no real, there isn't really funding or opportunities specific to, you know, students that want to go to the UN or students that want to do tax and human rights. Like, it just doesn't exist quite yet, right? So this summer, so after the mission team program, I actually was I was working with Dr. Schwartz on AI regulation around the world, and I was working with two other like just amazing people that I met through the Mishpatim program, because we spent 1 month in Israel, so we kind of grew like very close, great bonding. So working in the summer was like, it was so much fun. It wasn't even like working, right? So anyway, he's actually the chair of the ASPR Journal of International Business and Trade Law, right? So I was like, okay, international business, that kind of makes sense, kind of applies, okay. And then the Desitel Center is also another area, right? But I just knew that. So let me go back with the ASPR trip, right? Because I was one of the student researchers, we were actually invited to attend the university like alumni awards, I think it was earlier on in September. So there was a table by the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. So like a couple of us that just worked throughout the summer were invited to attend. And one of the key things that they kept saying throughout the entire award ceremony was like, there are funds available at the university. You just have to take the, you know, like the step forward and figure out where they are. And I was like, okay, well, seems a bit, you know, like I feel like this could be a lot more easier. But I literally was like, okay, let me go through the website. And then I was like, okay, Ying is responsible for finances. Rory Churchill is responsible for scholarships. The ADJD must have something for conferences, right? And I just went down the list. But at the end of the day, oh, and I was also able to reach out to people at like the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, and off the record, but I don't know how much of those you're going to use. I might just say off the record for a lot of things. Just don't make me sound like a crackhead, please.
Hold on. Don't worry about it.
Right. So I was able to get some funding from like, well, they were like, oh, you know, this is an amazing like opportunity. I think this is great. We definitely want you to get like exposure. So if it doesn't work out, like if you're not able to get funding through the school, contact us, we'll see what we can do. And I was like, it was amazing. But by the time I finished everything, I did get enough funding, right? So the Desitel Center for Private Enterprise and the Law, right? So Dr. Laura Reimer, she's responsible for program development at the University of Manitoba Faculty of Law. Oh, so long. She was able to give, like, she was able to contribute some stuff, some funds, let me say that, just some funds, not stuff. But in exchange, right? So I started doing some, I offered to write a blog for them, right? And then the second part of my funding, it was primarily the two places. So the Desitel Center and then the ASPR chair, right? So then the ASPR chair was able to also give me funding, and that was quite quick. But again, like it was more so like a contractual agreement where I was like, I can offer my services in writing like a paper or whatever you want, really, right? Like an article, a paper, a blog post, or if you want me to speak at a class, like I don't know, like just whatever you want, right? So for the Desitel Center, they were like, you can write a blog post and we'll give you some funds. And then, well, I don't really know what I'm doing for the ASPR chair yet, Yeah, I sent him an email upon my return, and I was like, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know I'm back. I'd love to, chat a little bit more about what I can contribute to the Asper Journal. So let me know when there's an appropriate time and whatever. So there's that. Boom. Yeah.
So what days did you were you actually at the UN?
So I did go for a week. I had one extra day. But the conference itself was from the 17th of October all the way to the 20th of October. So basically the week.
And what was the name of the conference?
Okay, so it was the 27th session of the Committee of Experts on International Cooperation in Tax Matters. Yeah.
This question's like pretty open-ended, so you can kind of take it wherever you want. But what
Okay.
do you experience during your time at the UN?
Oh, it was so phenomenal. I didn't okay, so in full transparency, right? Like, I'm not an expert on tax, right? And the committee itself is literally called Experts on Tax. So I didn't know really what I was going into, but I did quite a bit of prep beforehand, right? So I was trying to understand I'd say like the larger thematic topics, right? So some of them, like on their website, you can always see like the tax committee actually has subcommittees, right? So subcommittees on transfer pricing, subcommittees on increasing tax transparency, et cetera, right? So all of those subcommittees were essentially like during the conference itself, right? So a subcommittee would come up and they would say, okay, this is what we're working on. This is our work plan. This is what we're going to do next. Here are some technical papers that we published. And here are our suggestions. We would love for member states, civil society, businesses, et cetera, to sort of comment on like the work that we've done so far and our proposals and whatnot, right? So I couldn't necessarily talk about technicals because I didn't have that sort of a capacity quite yet, right? I'm still learning. But I have a good understanding to be able to decipher what countries were asking for, right? So there were really clear concerns between developing nations and developed states, right? So you would see that developing nations, they don't have the capacity. They're looking for government funding for social services, right? But they don't necessarily have those funds to start mobilizing their own resources, right? So it really becomes quite challenging because you have it's like a dialogue, right? So you have developing states and I think the member state from Jamaica was, oh, and I also have an article on this too. It's coming out on the Days of Tell Center. But anyway, oh, and I'm also writing for them for like a five piece. Anyway, I'll tell you what I'm doing after later. But the member state from Jamaica was quite honest about, so it's really crazy, right? Because it's just like, so what. Let me explain this in a way that doesn't make me sound like an idiot. The thing is, like, tax and human rights, and this is sort of like a little bit on a tangent, but tax and human rights, it's not an immediate connection, right? So, like, for example, if you like education and human rights, I feel like that's a pretty, no, let me just say, let's say employment and poverty, right? It's a really clear connection. No employment, increase in poverty, right? But for tax, it's a bit of a chain, right? So tax is government revenue, social services like education, healthcare, administrative services for the country to actually do, the administrative tasks, right? And then those impact individuals that can't afford privatized services, right? And then at the end of the day, those are typically the people who are most likely in poverty, right? So it really is that sort of connection that we have to draw, right? So one of those factors is capacity building, and a lot of the member states, and this is where Jamaica came in and said, we don't have the capacity, not only in terms of manpower or people power, but also in terms of education, right? So when you don't have quality education, how can you ensure that tax administrators who actually typically need a pretty good understanding of finance, legislation, something, I don't know, right? Like it's got to be a little bit more. Like you're not just going to hire a low-skilled worker to work in tax administration. So she was like, when there's a divide there, we really can't even address tax administration capacities, which is something that developed countries were already like, oh, we want to propose this. We have this idea, right? It's just not within the scope of what their problems are right now. So that's really where where this the idea of a UN tax commission convention, right, just having sort of like a minimum tax base all around the world comes up. And I think that itself was sort of like the underlying theme throughout the entire conference. But the thing was, no one really wants to talk about it because it's so complicated. And when I say it's complicated, it's because you have what, don't quote me on this, but you have like 201 like member states, right? And then of all the member states, they all have their own jurisdictions, whether they're common law jurisdictions or civil law jurisdictions, right? And then on top of that, they have their own tax structures, right? So then in terms of creating these agreements that is multilateral, as opposed to bilateral, which is what we have right now, which is still complicated in itself, right? It's just like, what? But anyway, that's but really, like it's a really long chain of events, like, and you have to draw that connection. You have to be able to recognize that, how are things connected? Because again, it is a chain, and people don't necessarily but yeah, overall, like the feelings were just quite, it was unbelievable. Like it was very surreal. And I just had the opportunity to meet so many people and just interact with like various levels of society, right? Like so you had people from member states, then you had people who were members of the committee, then you had people from civil society, and then you had people from the business sector and NGOs and so on, right? And these were people from all over the world, right? So being able to interact with each and every single one of them, right? Well, I didn't, not every single one of them, but I did go around quite a bit, right? And I made sure to introduce myself, because I mean, like, when else am I gonna get the opportunity, right? So I made tons of connections, and I built relationships that hopefully I can sort of continue to maintain in the future. And everyone was just so excited because, again, like tax, although it is human rights, you have to understand that you need to have an understanding, at least a basic understanding of tax law, right? It, within your jurisdiction, right? The majority of the people there are straight white men, right? So you're not necessarily having that diversity, that female leadership, within the UN Tax Committee, right? So I think a lot of people there were just really excited to see someone so young, someone young and someone who's not necessarily a professional come to the UN Tax Committee meeting, right? Just also because I think one of the things that so I met the Canadian who was on part, like who's, so I actually reached out to her on LinkedIn before going to the conference, and I was like, hey, how's it going, Steph? Her name is Stephanie Smith, and she's just been so amazing. She's been like, you can say just an amazing resource, right? She's like, oh, there's not enough people who want to get unjust in tax, but like you know what, us nerds, like we got to find something, so let me know. And I was like, okay, anyway, whatever. So that was it. It was just a spectacular experience. I really enjoyed it. The kinds of people that I met, the levels of discussion, it's unlike anything I've ever experienced or been a part of in my life.
So you spoke about the complexities of this, convention even possibly happening. I think many people see the UN, they're very cynical about it. They see it as a useless institution. Based on your time there, What do you kind of have to say to that? Do you have a different perspective? Do you see it as being a useful tool? Kind of just what do you think now that you've actually kind of had a hands-on experience with it?
Great. Good. Great question. Great question. So there's a couple of elements to that question that I think we need to break up a little bit, right? So first of all, there is the UN, right? But there's also the OECD, right? Which is the Organization Economic Development. I don't know what the C stands for, but you figure that out. But basically the OECD is what you can say is like the competing, or like the UN's kind of like only competitor at the moment, because it's also a regulatory body, but they have guidelines, right? So when we talk about a UN tax convention, it's a multilateral tax convention, right? But it kind of already exists, right? So the OECD has their own, okay, so it's a very convoluted name. So stay with me. So it's called BAPS MLI 2.0. So it's called Base Erosion Profit Shifting Multilateral Instrument, right? So it's basically a tax treaty. And this is something I'm writing about too. But it's a tax, well, it's guidelines for tax treaties that are specific to the nations that are playing, that are doing business with one another, okay? But the challenge with, and it's very, very complicated. So say I'm Canada, right? And I'm entering into an agreement. Well, let's just say I'm Canada, okay? So basically the OECD has guidelines then for doing business with the US, doing business with African countries, doing business with like India, China, right? So it does lay out guidelines, but it's just like, okay, so you have a multilateral instrument. You have like 150 different documents for one country. It's really complex, right? But it is a very it's a very tailored approach, right? So it's not something that's like an umbrella term and you figure it out, right? You get your army of suits to just sort of decipher what laws apply, what don't. No, it is a guideline, and I think it's a really great solution. Unfortunately, I don't think it actually benefits developing nations, and I think that's where the UN comes into play, right? When you look at the OECD, right, like, and you look at the countries that are participants of it, I believe three of those countries, it's like a very small number, are actually countries that are developing and let's say just located in Africa. So that's of the 28, right? And when it comes down to creating these guidelines, right, it's done on a committee basis, right? So members of each state, right, come in and they vote on certain topics, right? So is there representation? I don't think so. And you know, having 28 countries sign up for the OECD as opposed to the 201, right, countries nationwide or globally, right? I think that there's something there that we're missing in the OECD, right? There isn't that representation. And this is sort of where the UN comes into play. At the end of the day, nothing, well, mostly everything from the UN that it publishes, that it creates, right? They're non-jurisdictionally binding, right? So that's one of the biggest complications is like, as a law student, like, of course we want to work for these large NGOs that are supposedly trying to make, you know, global change, right? And the UN Tax Committee, I think, is just something that, in terms of employment, right, it would just be such an amazing thing to do. But again, it's that disassociation between like, am I actually making change, or am I just part of a big fancy committee that meets in Switzerland every couple of times a year? The reality is that there are conversations happening at the UN that allow, you know, developing states to actually have their voice heard. And I don't really know any other platform where that's possible, right? So obviously the OECD is not something that happened, but it happens, but at least the UN is a place that allows all representatives from literally any jurisdiction to sort of come and share their opinions and share their thoughts. And that's why I think the UN is more of an inclusive and a diverse approach than the OECD's multilateral instrument. And I also think that it's really important to keep in mind that the UN Tax Committee recognizes that it does more be it's meant to benefit developing countries. And that recognition itself and that statement, I think it's on their website as well, right? I think it's more meaningful.
So I guess bring it maybe back to Robson Hall a little bit.
That's amazing. Like, there's just so many opportunities. And I think a lot of people don't realize, like, I'm applying for like summer jobs and just like basically applying quite broadly. And the scope that like where how like how much you can apply your JD in various categories, right? Especially when it comes to financial institutions or different NGOs is like what? Like it's something that you wouldn't really imagine. So I think once we sort of like create a little bit of buzz around that, right? Like the possibilities of legal careers with NGOs or with human rights organizations, because honestly, everyone's out to get a big law corporate job. And I'm not going to be a hypocrite. Like, of course, I was too at the beginning, right? And then I got rejected and I was like, oh God, I need to figure something else out. But by the time I had already been in the mood, I had already been in human rights, and it was just a matter of figuring out what's the next step, right? And that's sort of that. But yeah, I think it's really about explaining to people where the gap is, right? Because again, it's not a straightforward connection. It's not like abuse is a violation of human rights. Makes sense, right? But human rights, not so much. You have to draw that chain in order for people to start realizing that this is even an area of consideration. When I look at my tax course, it's really interesting. There's like 20 people in it, right? And that's a combination of three L's and two L's. So if you think about it numerically, there's like 100 people in 1L, there's sorry, 100 people in 2L, 100 people in 3L. So out of 200 students, that's 20 people. So what, like 10% of people have an interest in tax, right? I think that's something that kind of goes to show that not a lot of people might be interested in tax, right? But it would be very interesting to see like a business and human rights sort of LLM program. I think that would open up a lot of doors for, international affairs, working in diplomacy, working in government. And at the end of the day, like we have to get jobs. So maybe it sounds a bit sick, but maybe kind of like showcasing the potential of where you can end up, right? As opposed to like, like comfortable corporate jobs, then I think people would become more incentivized to even have a second look at tax.